Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Three Ways to Ensure Automotive Developers Deliver Secure, Compliant, Protect-Free Software. My name is Rich Nass, and I am the Brand Director for Embedded Computing Design. That's one of the two divisions of Open Systems Media. I'll be your moderator for today's webcast. Our speaker today, Philip O'Hara, is from Rogue Wave Software. Philip is responsible for managing and directing Rogue Wave's partner and alliances business in EMEA. He also has over 15 years of experience in establishing and growing key partner relationships over this region in both startup and larger organizations. He came from Rogue Wave when his company Clockwork was acquired, and he holds an engineering degree from Brunel University in London. So the bottom line is Philip qualifies as an expert on this subject, so I'm looking forward to hearing his presentation. Let me say a few words about Rogue Wave before we get started. They are the largest independent provider of cross-platform software development tools and embedded components in the world. The end application areas span financial services, healthcare, academia, government, and telecom. In short, the company's tools, libraries, and services enable developers to write better code faster. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about some of the housekeeping stuff before we get started. The entire presentation will take about 45 minutes, give or take a few minutes, and that'll leave us enough time to answer your questions, hopefully. And we'll get to as many as time permits. So you'll find on your console there's a button that allows you to enter your questions in real time, and we'll get to as many as we can after Philip's presentation. If we don't have a chance to answer all of your questions, someone from Rogue Wave will be getting back to you after the eCast is over. If you have any questions that pertain to the eCast itself, like if you can't hear the audio, well, you wouldn't hear me if you weren't hearing the audio, but if there's a problem with the audio or the slides aren't advancing, put that into the console and somebody in the eCast team will be getting back to you and they'll prepare that. On the console, there's a button to enlarge the slides. If you click that, you'll be able to see the slides in full screen mode. And then there's a forward to a friend button if you'd like to email somebody the information about this event. This eCast will be posted online within 48 hours, and an audio podcast will also be available. Okay, that's enough for me. Let me bring out our expert speaker, Philip O'Hara from Rogue Wave Software. Philip, take it away.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to the webinar. I will just say I wouldn't consider myself an expert, but I have been working in the automotive marketplace for the last few years, and so I'd certainly like to share the knowledge that I've gained over those years with you. So today I'm going to cover what to consider when delivering secure, compliant, defect-free software in the automotive marketplace, and indeed why we should even be concerned about these topics. As Rich said, it will last around about 45 minutes with some time at the end for questions. However, if you think of a question as we go along, please enter it in the Q&A, the question box. It will go to the moderator and we'll answer it at the end of the session. So I'm going to discuss with you three key areas. Let me just move this slide on. So I'm going to discuss with you three key areas of concern for all of us who develop code in the automotive marketplace. Could the moderator forward the slide on? Thank you. First area is mitigating security vulnerabilities from threats and attacks. Second, complying with safety standards. Importantly, which ones and how to enforce them company-wide, and indeed how to report on them to your customers. And also we want to talk about preventing software failures due to costly defects. Thank you. So, right, let's touch on each of those areas in a bit more detail. First of all, security. Software in cars today is becoming highly connected and vulnerable to cyber threats. These threats can range in severity and in systems affected, but can potentially be fatal. You have to bear in mind that they have 100 or more ECUs and can easily contain 100 million lines of code or more. All of these give a hacker an opportunity to take control of any number of systems on the vehicle. Safety, well, standards are in place, of course, and these keep drivers safe, but they're also there to protect OEMs and suppliers from liability. Staying up to date on the latest standards is essential, but of course it's time consuming. Plus, your developers may not even know which standards matter to their software. Reliability. Your developers and QA teams spend a lot of time looking for glitches and code failures because, as we all know, today's highly competitive marketplace, even a single defect is not okay. Preventing failures in mission-critical code as early as possible is key to keeping down rework costs and limiting future liabilities, such as, you know, recalls or decreased customer satisfaction. Let's just consider for a moment the modern infotainment unit that now sits at the heart of many new cars. This is the way that more and more consumers are interacting with their vehicles, and perhaps not surprisingly, these systems are increasingly responsible for customer complaints. So today, we'll delve deeper into each of these three topics and take a look at how developers can make sure their code addresses each of these three criteria. Next, thank you. So delivering compliant, defect-free software. And let's first of all focus on mitigating security vulnerabilities from threats and attacks. In other words, plugging all the security holes in your code. Okay. Right, so there's just a couple of background pieces of information for you. US and German companies had the most costly data breaches in 2013. Perhaps not surprisingly, these are the two of the world's largest economies and produce the most advanced systems. Now, these breaches include malicious or criminal attacks by forcing human error, system glitches, or business process failure. And you've probably all heard of the big examples this year, Target and Heartbleed. But you're probably wondering, what has all this got to do with the automotive marketplace? Well, the big concern is that research has demonstrated that hacking into vital systems in a car is quite possible, and we need to act now before a serious breach or malfunction takes place. Thankfully, the automotive industry is recognizing the risks and are building out cybersecurity teams within the organizations, and industry alliances are beginning to form to deter hackers. Now, to account for all these breaches, companies are spending a lot of money on training, testing, and triaging, but there are tools out there to help make managing your code much easier. It's really hard for developers to cover all these bases concerning security, plus, of course, it's very time-consuming. The right tools allow developers to focus on writing code securely whilst meeting your time-to-market requirements. So the slide here says mitigating security vulnerabilities, and let's just think about that for a moment. Now, examples highlighted here, things as making sure the car stays locked, kind of wireless keys. Many of us have keys we just slip into our pocket. You don't need to take them out and touch them with the car. Can those keys be bypassed? Bluetooth communications is something that's very interesting right now for software security. Can those communications be monitored? And indeed, can we hack our way into those communications and maliciously Bluetooth up to a car to actually make or modify the software on that car in some way? It's been demonstrated actually by a couple of guys called Charlie Miller and Chris Valasek that this is not just blue sky thinking. These guys showed that they could hijack the steering and brakes of a Ford Escape and a Toyota Prius with nothing but laptops connected to these cars. Now, the next step is clearly to connect and hack wirelessly. So at this year's Black Hat conference in Las Vegas, Charlie and Chris presented about that very question. Can hackers perform the same tricks wirelessly, or even more scarily, simply over the internet? Now, if you own an Infiniti Q50, a Jeep Cherokee, or heaven forbid a 2015 Cadillac Escalade, then you're not going to like the answers. And it comes back a lot of this to the infotainment system, which is the heart of a lot of the research. If you can hack the radio and send messages to the brakes or the steering, just imagine what you can do. So all of these systems need to be made as secure as possible. So here are some of the techniques to consider when bringing security into focus for your development teams. What do they need? They need visibility into applications as it is written, once it's created, to understand and be able to characterize the design, architecture, and code of the system, especially as it relates to security. Are inputs validated? Is access limited to protected data? Reports and audits. And this is later on. You'll see where Clockwork and OpenLogic from Rogue Wave Software come into play. You've got to measure how your code lives up to security standards. Where are the gaps? What are the gaps? And how can they be closed? Threat modeling. This is interesting. It's a simulation of the scary environment. Understand how your system can be attacked from a design and code perspective, and then make conscious decisions about risk mitigation. For example, let's say you use cryptography. Assume that the algorithms will be broken or replaced over time, meaning keep the crypto code modular and easily replaceable. Finally, penetration testing. This is attempted hacking of the system, both from a white box and black box testing perspective, and can reveal surprising weaknesses in your code. It's the result of attacker mindset versus a testing for defense. So that's a brief overview of security concerns and issues we may face. Let's move on to discuss standards. Now, we all know that the automotive industry is under increasing pressure to comply with standards, whether coding, functional, or otherwise. Now, we'll talk about compliance with these ever-increasing safety standards. But first, I want to encourage a little bit of audience participation. And we're going to have three or four of these poll questions as we go through the webinar today. So it's a very simple one to get you kick-started off. Does your organization require adherence to ISO 26262? And if you'd just like to submit yes or no, and we'll take a look to see what the results of that are. Okay, so hopefully you can see that on your window. So do you require adherence to 26262? 42.8%, nearly half of the audience, which is probably not a surprise. If we'd have asked that question just 2 years ago, I think it would have been considerably less. And if we asked that question probably in another 12 months, it would be considerably more. So it's clearly important to a lot of people here, and those who aren't using it may need to be looking at it in the future. So there are many standards across software development. The main standards for automotive software are MISRA and ISO 26262. Let's just take a look at those. MISRA is the Motor Industry Software Reliability Association. It's a collaboration between vehicle manufacturers, component suppliers, and engineering consultancies seeking to promote best practice in developing safety-related electronic systems in road vehicles and other embedded systems. There's MISRA C and MISRA C++. And a few versions of the standard have been released over the years, the latest being MISRA C 2012. They're all focused on code safety, portability, and reliability. MISRA covers everything from guidelines for coding style, like how to write comments, to potentially dangerous issues like uninitialized variables. Now the last one, ISO 26262, it's really a subset of IEC 61508, before anybody rushes to look up an unpublished standard. And it's intended to be applied to safety-related systems that include one or more electrical and or electronic systems that are installed in production passenger cars. 26262 addresses possible hazards caused by malfunctioning behavior of these safety-related systems, including the interaction of these systems, and defines methods and measures to ensure development processes and tools avoid systematic or random failures in software. Right, so there's three main bodies of interest here. First of all, we have the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, the IEEE, the International Organization for Standardization, ISO, and the US Department of Transportation, DOT. Now, all these bodies are fairly similar in their makeup. The IEEE is led by a diverse body of elected and appointed volunteer members. The governance structure includes boards for operational areas, as well as bodies representing members in the 45 societies and technical councils in 10 worldwide geographic regions. ISO is made up of 165 member countries. They give specifications for products, services, and systems to ensure quality, safety, and efficiency. The US Department of Transport really oversees federal highway, air, railroad, maritime, and other transportation administration functions. Whatever the standard, the onus is on the development team to understand, educate, and implement strategies that get to compliance faster without taking time away from regular feature development. It's not an easy balance, but one that's made easier through well-defined processes and automated tools. So We've discussed what standards are available and who governs them, but the important thing is, how do your organizations comply and also demonstrate that you've complied and adhered to your chosen standard? Using static analysis is one way of doing so. And there are really three steps in this process. The first step I would call justification and definition. So which rules are you going to check? Maybe the full MISRA set of rules, or probably more realistically, just a subset of MISRA. Are you including any of your own custom standards, for example, as well with that? Defining what you're actually going to check is important, or sorry, is as important as the actual checks themselves. Once you have those checks defined, simply putting a coding standards manual in front of a developer is not really going to hold much weight with the standards body. How do you actually enforce those rules and standards? And the answer is to use a tool. That begs the next question. How do you know that the tool you choose does what it says? And the answer there is to use a tool that's been certified by one of the standards bodies itself. An example being Clockwork from Roguewave, which is certified by TÜV. And we'll discuss this in more detail later on. So now you've defined which standards you're going to check, you've enforced them and put a tool into place. The final step is reporting, and you may need to justify or state what you're checking. You've done those checks, and then finally, as I just said, you provide a compliance report to either the appropriate bodies or to your end users, your customers, to demonstrate that you've adhered to the standards chosen. So that's standards. Finally, let's talk about quality. Now, quality, you know, it's those annoying bugs, the ones that people talk about when they talk about code quality, the ones that development teams don't really need to be spending so much time on, and yet they're critical to customer perception and experience. So I want to talk about preventing software failure due to costly defects. But first of all, it's time for another quick poll question. Question is, how much time does your development team spend on fixing defects? So you can answer that one. And let's have a look at the answers. Well, press the wrong button. Right, here we go. So 70% of people have their developers spending less than 25% of their time finding defects. Interestingly, almost 30% of you have between 50 and 75% of your development team spending their time fixing defects. So whichever end of the spectrum it is, it's a lot of time finding and fixing defects. Okay, so we've just talked about coding standards. Now, the goal of a coding standard is to increase reliability by increasing awareness of intelligent coding practices. Now, a coding standard may contain rules that help developers avoid dangerous language constructs, limit complexity of functions, and use a consistent syntactical and commenting style. These rules can drastically reduce the occurrence of flaws, make software easier to test, and improve long-term maintainability. However, by themselves, coding standards do not eliminate software defects. Let's just take a look at some of the more common code defects. And I'm going to start with a memory leak because this is a real classic. A memory leak is a failure in a program to release discarded memory. This can build up over time, causing impaired performance or indeed induce a complete failure. And I think we probably will experience something along those lines. We also have untrapped exceptions, a failure at a higher level to catch errors generated at a lower level, again, causing unexpected behavior or crashes. Unchecked stacks and buffers, unchecked areas where data is stored. Misplaced pointers, does your pointer actually work and make sense? Problems with array indexes, you know, did your team put the array indexing in the appropriate place? And this one I like, it's errors in error handlers. And it's quite interesting. So error handling refers to the anticipation, detection, and resolution of programming, application, and communication errors. Sometimes there are errors within these areas, which again just cause all sorts of problems. These types of bugs occur all the time and are sometimes easy to fix, but sometimes not. The trick is detecting where these flaws are, especially in code that's split over multiple files or many developers. So we've highlighted some of the quality defects that are commonly found in code. But we also need to think about when is the best time to find and fix these defects. Now, clearly, the cost of fixing a defect goes up the longer they remain in code. Imagine trying to find and fix the root cause of an application crashing in a production environment versus fixing it as soon as you're writing the code. And just like many things in life, the earlier you can find, understand, and fix a problem, the better. However, let's just take a look at a couple of real-world examples. And particularly in the automotive marketplace, here's two very recent examples, both within the last 6 to 8 weeks. First one is the Ford Fusion, or in Europe, I think we call that a slightly different thing. But this involved a recall of around about 60,000 vehicles across the US, Canada, and Mexico for a software glitch that could result in the car rolling away. The flaw allows the Fusion's key to be removed from the ignition switch 30 minutes after the vehicle has been shut off, whether or not the transmission is in park. So if the emergency brake isn't engaged and the vehicle's on an incline, the car can roll away. Now, you could argue the case as to whether or not a tool could have helped identify that issue. I don't actually know the details of how it's programmed, but it does highlight the problems that finding defects late in the day can cause. More serious, however, is the Audi airbag recall. So this is on the Audi A4, which has involved a recall of 102,000 cars due to a software fault that may prevent the airbags from properly deploying in the event of a crash. This is absolutely critical, and the potential liability issues surrounding an airbag not deploying properly and someone being injured are simply huge. In both of these situations, the cars have to be returned to dealers for a software update. So the physical cost and the cost to brand reputation is huge in both of those examples. So let's just take a moment to summarize what we've been discussing so far before we move on to discuss some of the solutions that are available. We've talked about mitigating security vulnerabilities from threats and attacks. We've talked about complying with safety standards, how you choose which one and how you enforce them company-wide. And we've just touched on preventing software failure due to costly defects. Let's now go on to discuss some of the solutions that Rogue Software offers to ensure your developers are delivering secure, compliant, defect-free software. But it wouldn't be right to move on until we had another poll. So this question, it's an interesting question. When does your team fix defects in the software development process? Is it at the implementation stage, the build stage, the test stage, or in maintenance mode? If you'd like to submit your answers, and there we go. So most people are finding and fixing their defects at either the build or the test stage. And we'll touch on that in a few slides about how we can help you find and fix your defects much earlier in the process, as indeed 20% of you are right up there at the implementation stage. Now, talking solutions, I'd like to touch on the subject of open source management. Now, we haven't mentioned open source yet, but clearly, with open source software being literally everywhere, its potential cause of defects in your code and its use needs to be carefully controlled. Given that any developer can find, download, and include open source code from anywhere, could your organization be using open source software without your knowledge? If so, do you know the potential security risks or bugs that the open source code may contain? Knowing where and how open source is being used is absolutely critical to managing the potential breaches, bugs, or downtime that could result. It's really exactly the same as code you've written on your own. So it's important to identify and analyze gaps in your policy to make sure you know about and properly manage all aspects of open source within your software development process. Now, RogueWave has a solution called OpenLogic that can address these open source concerns. First of all, on the support side, OpenLogic technical support provides the same level of confidence for open source code as technical support for commercial products, supporting hundreds of open source software packages for issues encountered in both development and production environments. OpenLogic technical support can form a vital part of your technical backup. Scanning. Understanding the technical issues, the licensing models, and the potential security flaws before using open source code is obviously critical to making good choices. Knowing what, where, and how open source software is used within your organization is the key to reducing risk and minimizing your liability. Delivering applications on time, including open source that you're confident of, is achievable. OpenLogic Scanning Tool is a software as a service governance platform for comprehensive governance and provisioning of open source software. Our tool scans source code as well as binaries to identify open source code and licenses, even when the open source code has been copied or modified. In addition to the tool itself, OpenLogic offers a range of services which can include application audits, application certification, license obligation analysis, and much more. Static code analysis. We touched on this earlier when we mentioned standards. Static code analysis has actually been around for many years. There are simple tools out there that help with coding rules at the desktop. This is what we would call structural problems. And there are more complex tools that have powerful data flow and path analysis engines that generally tend to work downstream of the coding, often at the build stage, to highlight serious security and quality defects. However, managing two tools in itself presents a problem, and providing those all-important quality and security defect information results to a developer after they've written the code is not really best practice and does not enforce coding quality and security. Cockwork from Rogueway is a single tool that combines both a structural and a data flow engine to provide a single environment to enforce coding standards, best practices, and also stop serious defects entering the code base. All of this as the code is being written right there on the developer's desktop inside their IDE in real time. Now, Clockwork has a powerful data flow checker for both security and quality or reliability defects, examples of which can be found on the slide here. And we have hundreds of these checks, and the tool highlights the potential defects to a developer in real time, advises why it believes there's a problem, and allows the developer to make an informed decision. And this information is all captured for full defect tracking and reporting to the management teams. On the coding standards side, Clockwork has support not only for MISRA, but many security standards, including CERT, CWE, etc. Plus, it's really easy to add your own company standards should you wish. Clockwork also has that important TUV certification so that you know the tool is trustworthy, which is an important part of your compliance procedure. Now, let's just take a look at a typical software development lifecycle. Now, it's represented here along the horizontal axis. We have design, implementation, etc., all the way through to release. And on the vertical axis is the number of defects found. The black line represents where in our software development process defects are usually identified, which, as you can see, is the build and system test stage. And I think this highlights the poll earlier. Now, the red line represents the cost of fixing those defects. So again, as you would expect, it's more costly the later you find them. As we all know, and highlighted by the Audi A4 recall we discussed earlier, finding a bug once software is released is hugely expensive. Of course, although most defects are found at the build and QA stages, as this slide demonstrates, most of them are actually introduced at the coding stage. So this is where we need to capture and correct them. And this is exactly what Clockwork from Rogueway does. So Clockwork finds defects at the developer's desktop with full system knowledge, even if the developer is working on small sub-projects or even just a single file, to provide faster time to market and better quality coding for a vastly reduced cost, and at the same time enforcing those coding standards. So I've talked to you today about the various issues that you may face in the automotive world and how to deliver secure, compliant, defect-free software. I've discussed two solutions from Rogueway Software, OpenLogic for your open source issues, and Clockwork as a static analysis tool to help you find security, quality defects, and help you to enforce coding standards. I'd now like to move on to question and answer sessions, and you can we'll start to answer some of those questions that have been forwarded to the moderator. But before we do that, I have a final question for you. Did you learn something from today? So there's a quick poll there. But once we've done that, we can move into the question and answer session. Well, that's very encouraging. All of you found something useful in today's presentation, so thank you for that. And what I'd like to do now is hand back to the moderator for questions.
Thanks, Philip. I don't think I would have asked that last question. What if the answer was, you know, what if the responses were flipped? What would you have done?
I would have done the presentation again.
Okay. Okay, let me start by saying I have a problem with your presentation. I just got a brand new Jeep Grand Cherokee, and I am not happy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a Cadillac Escalade.
No. Well,
no.
It's the same boat, isn't it? I mean, that's a pretty big problem. I mean, I don't think I'm going to get hacked there, but I wasn't really happy to hear that.
No.
Okay. First question was one that I have with, and we do have a bunch of questions, and we'll obviously get to as many as we can, but
sure.
let me start with my own here regarding open source. Okay, so you spent a lot of time talking about the issues with open source software, but there's very little control over open source software. So how do you know if the open source software that you're using is buggy or not?
Well, that's part of the problem. You don't. So you would use a tool like OpenLogic, which would scan, tell you exactly what open source packages you're using in your code base, and then advise you as to whether you should be using them, what are the known defects in those open source packages. And, of course, beyond that, Clockwork on top of that can scan not just the open source package, but the way it's been integrated into your code to understand if there are defects both in the package and if it's affected the wider code base.
Sounds like a pretty scary proposition, though.
Yes, it is, absolutely. And the whole subject of in-car security is just getting bigger and bigger, whether it's through open source, you know, the introduction of open source components into a car, or whether it's just through general coding practices. But, you know, people have demonstrated that taking over a car is quite possible. So the two gentlemen I mentioned earlier at the Black Hat conference, they did a survey of about 50 vehicles. And as you say, the Jeep Cherokee actually sadly came to either top or bottom of the list, depending on how you want to look at it, of cars that are most hackable.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said, that doesn't make me happy, but it is what it is. Okay, so let's get to the questions because we do have a bunch of them. Okay. To what extent should functions protect themselves versus trusting other parts of the system?
Okay, so let me think. It's dependent on the design of the system and whether you have knowledge or input into how other parts of the system are actually designed. But if you're the system architect, it's kind of prudent to build security in at the outer layers. And kind of maybe not worry about it quite so much at the inner layers, but at least if you can ensure the outer layers are protected. If you can't verify that data or access to your component is secure, you do need to build in security that validates data, enforces access control, enforces boundaries, and avoids using code with known vulnerabilities, which I guess touches back on the open source thing. But it's all about understanding exactly what's going on with the system, putting in some outer layer protection, and for stuff that you know is maybe going to work with other components that you're not so sure of, yeah, absolutely, build in data validation and access controls to those. Because as we've seen, if you can hack into a radio, you know, you may then be able to hack into the steering system, the brake system, all of which is pretty critical.
So, getting back to my scared scenario, has this ever actually happened? Has one of these cars been hacked into and we've taken over any of it?
Yes. So we touched on this earlier. So Charlie and Chris, they connected. Granted, it was with a laptop. It wasn't wirelessly, but they connected just with a laptop into a Toyota Prius, and I think it's a Ford Fusion, and actually went through the infotainment system and took control of the braking and steering of the car.
But so if you can do it by... It was just to see if it could be done, right?
It wasn't malicious, yes. They're not in jail now. This is just to see if it could be done. And that led on to their next piece of research, was to see whether or not they could actually, go in through Bluetooth. And a pair of them consider that Bluetooth is one of the biggest and probably the most viable attack surfaces in the modern automobile. We all hook up our phones to cars, and if you can just get into that connection, there's a lot of, it's scary stuff like brakes and steering. It's also things like if they're into the infotainment system, they could simply reprogram the navigation system, and you could be driving anywhere because most people don't actually look at the road where they're going. It's just, navigation system says left or right, and off they go. So that's quite scary too.
Well, that would actually be funny, but okay. Maybe it's not funny. Okay, next question. Does either OpenLogic or Clockwork support integration with continuous integration servers such as Jenkins?
Yes, Clockwork does have a ready-to-go integration with Jenkins, absolutely. And we have many customers who work together with Clockwork and Jenkins.
Okay. Let's see.
What I will say, whoever answered that question, we can drop them a note on how to pick up the little integration package that's required. So we can do that after the end of the webinar.
Okay. Very good. Let's see. If you have any doubts about the risks, this isn't a question. If you have any doubts about the risk, check out Car Hacks for Dummies or Car Hackers, both books available on Amazon. Well, thank you. Okay. And the same person asked the question, are automotive OEMs or Tier 1s requiring proof of scanning results?
Yes, they are. Not everybody all the time, but increasingly we're finding we're working both with OEMs and the Tier 1s, and the OEMs are pushing down to the Tier 1 suppliers, and who are in turn pushing down to their suppliers, that you must deliver MISRA compliant code, or you must deliver code that's complies 26262. So yes, it is beginning to become a requirement and indeed a mandate from the OEMs that those Tier 1s deliver compliant code.
Here's a longer multi-part question, so bear with me. If you want me to repeat it, I can. Is the Clockwork solution especially attractive because it doesn't just certify compliance standards, but also provides additional coverage in the usual sticky areas of source code development? Okay, why don't you ask that, and then I'll ask you the second part after that.
I guess the answer to that is yes. It is especially attractive. Yes. So one of the, and I'm not quite sure this is what the question is getting at, but I think it's driving towards the fact that the use of Clockwork will help you build in security from the moment you write your code. It will start to help you write code securely, and it actually then provides the entire development team with a bit more awareness and knowledge of security. So in that respect, yes, it does kind of begin to make secure coding kind of sticky. Maybe that's not quite where the question was headed, but it means all the developers in the team start to have an understanding of security, so they're not just being guided by the tool, but over time, this is education for the developers.
Okay, that makes sense. And then the second part of the question was, how much do developers and managers appreciate this additional coverage level?
Generally, it's pretty welcome. Most people in the automotive industry are aware that stuff needs to be done about this. They're aware that they need to protect their code, and not always aware of the tools that are available to them. There is occasional concerns that certain management teams would have a look at developers and say, well, this developer is producing great code, this developer is producing not such great code. but I've actually yet to see an organization that implements a tool like Clockwork for those reasons. The reason to implement a tool like this is actually to bring the standard of every developer up and the standard of the code base up, and then obviously which ties into a question earlier, to then deliver results to end users and to customers to say, look, we're doing everything we can. Here's a report that shows you everything that we're checking for, our compliance to it. And, you know, sometimes it's fine. You don't have to agree to a rule. If, you know, an error is shown in Clockwork, it's fine to say, actually, that's not really a defect for me, as long as you identify that it's not a defect and have put in the report the reasons why that's not. But all of this stuff, it starts as a tool helping you, and then over time the developers get more educated, et cetera. And so it's a really good way of you know, encouraging good development practices.
Okay, sounds good. Which MISRA-C versions does Clockwork support?
MISRA, so the latest standard is MISRA 2012, which we support, and the previous one was 2004. I think 2008 is C++. So, yeah, 2004, 2012, and for C++, 2008. So all the kind of current standards.
Okay. Can you really ensure that software is free of defects? And this is also multi-part, but let's take them one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Can you really ensure that software is free of defects? I guess the simple answer is no. We're never going to ensure that software is absolutely 100% free of defects. But what we can do is zero in on the most serious defects. And so whether you believe your system is vulnerable.
Oops. Philip, did we lose you there?
Hello?
You're back. Okay.
Okay, apologies for that. So I don't know how much you missed, but we're never going to say it's completely utterly free of defects, but you identify which defects you're most interested in, and then Clockwork will check those ones and ensure that, you know, you've got all the memory, there's no memory leaks in there, there's no buffer overflows, those type of things.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so the next part.
It's not exhausting.
Sorry. Also, for static analyzers, you can only conclude that faults are present where detected. You can't be sure that all bugs were found by static analyzers. A static analyzer. Can you conclude on this, please? I guess they want confirmation.
Yes, I think that's pretty much as my answer. You know, we can't find all bugs. It really comes down to the time development process. So at the end of the development process, you know, you probably will run, for example, some dynamic analysis. You'll be having some unit testing and things like that. But the advantage of a tool such as Clockwork is, first of all, you're delivering, you're doing the coding standards at the desktop. You're finding an awful lot of those security defects, those quality defects, and actually you're delivering to your unit test team clean, defect-free software so they can concentrate on doing unit tests and not actually finding bugs and you know, annoying things in your code. So no, we're never going to find all the bugs, but it's more about delivering better software up to the testing team so they can actually test that the software does what it's supposed to do rather than test to find bugs. So I would you know, agree entirely with the questioner there.
Yep, that's fine. And I want to remind the audience, keep asking questions. These are all really good questions, and we still have some time left. So, you know, we can get to as many as we can get to. The next one is, can Clockwork integrate during the build to check everyone's code or the team's code?
Yes, very much so. It integrates during the build. And it checks everyone's code. As we talked about, the best way to find defects is to do it as you write the code, and that's exactly what Clockwork does. So as a developer, they have their environment, whether it's Eclipse, Visual Studio, or whatever else they're using. And Clockwork integrates not only in the build, but actually at the code creation time, so that as they're writing their code, they can actually check the code, to be honest, before it's even sent to be built. And it does this with full system knowledge, So, you know, you're doing a proper test.
You mentioned Eclipse. Just a side question. Are you a fan of using the Eclipse environment to do this sort of work?
Many of our customers do. Many of our customers use Visual Studio. Many of them use other things. You know, it's really personal preference, I guess.
But no particular recommendation. I guess you won't say, you know, you don't want to, they don't use a particular platform, but any best practice there?
No, I mean, even, you know, there are some companies that have, I mean, one of the automotive companies we work with in the infotainment world are Visual Studio across the board. Another one has multiple different environments. So, you know, we're not about changing that part of a company's process. We're more about just fitting into what you're doing and hopefully making that a little bit better.
Okay, fair enough. What about cell phones as attack vectors? Is it possible to access the car software through a cell phone? I'm sure the answer is yes. I'm going to hate that answer.
Yeah, I don't actually think there's any known instances of an attack yet, but certainly research says it's very, very possible, and it's really it's the most viable way to attack a car right now.
Okay, so that said, I mean, what are some of the things that we should be on the lookout beyond cell phones? I mean, I don't think, you know, somebody's going to be pulling up with a Wi-Fi connection next to a car, and, you know, I don't think you're going to plug something in. What is the other way you would hack in?
Well, actually, I mean, you could hack in over Wi-Fi. Many cars have, you know, some of the more modern cars do have Wi-Fi access now, so you could hack in that way. The other thing is, you know, can you hook into one of the diagnostic ports, plug in there, and then maybe you can open the entire car. And I think that was actually the case with BMWs recently. You could hack into the diagnostic port and then unlock and start the car. So it's simple things like that. You know, a lot of the focus is obviously on wireless hacking, but there are other ways to hack a car. You know, through the diagnostic port is a very good example.
Okay. Let's see. How do you think about diversification? For example, use of independent static analyzers and tools to get a higher detection figure.
Sorry, can you just say that again?
Sure. How do you think about diversification? For example, the use of independent static analyzers and tools to get a higher detection figure.
So I think, you know, using more tools to find more defects, I guess. And it's certainly true that if you run two tools, so maybe Clockwork and one other, you will find more defects. There's a bulk of defects that everybody finds. And then just due to the subtle differences of various tools, there will be a range of defects that we find that another tool won't find, and there'll be some defects that another tool might find and we don't. So it really depends on what type of defects you're looking for, the area of that you're looking into. Most companies don't run more than one static analysis, or at least not one data flow engine tool, but it's not unknown either. We do have customers who run more than one tool if they're really, really, really ultra cautious.
Okay. But isn't it true that just finding the defect is just the beginning of your problem?
Well, the important thing is once you've found it, because once you've found it, you can correct it. Yes, it's just the beginning, but it's a very good beginning, and you find a defect and it's fixed before you even put it into the code stream. It's where you find the defect. It's only the beginning if you find that defect after the code has been released, because then it's so difficult to find out how the defect got into the code, how to undo it, and actually then how to fix it, and that might involve a recall or whatever. So, yes, it is the beginning, But the earlier you find it, then the shorter it is and the quicker it is to actually fix that defect and get it sorted out.
Okay. I assume very often, probably more often than we want to admit, marketing gets involved in these. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we ship things with bugs if it's not going to be too big of a problem. Is that fair?
We ship things well. I wouldn't want to say that, but I think particularly in the automotive marketplace with the onset of, maybe not fully autonomous cars, but semi-autonomous cars, or certainly autonomous systems on a car, no one's prepared to do that. The liability implications are so massive that it kind of overrides any marketing desire to, you know, get a certain system out in place before another competitor. It simply has to be safe. You know, you simply cannot have a car's automatic cruise control system not braking when it sees another car slowing down.
Okay. Well, and here's one final question that's actually I offered a segue into this question without even realizing it. Do you share some liability if something goes wrong on the road after the code was checked and certified by your tools?
No. It's, we obviously make best efforts to find the defects, but we can't guarantee to find all of those defects. So no, we wouldn't do that because there's so many other things that can affect the car as well. So we're really just one component into a developer's arsenal. You know, it's a full range of testing.
So who does take on that responsibility? Is it the automaker? Is he the end guy? I mean, is he the guy who's going to be in the courtroom at the end of the day?
It will be the OEMs and the supplier. If the suppliers, you know, if one of the auto suppliers is supplying a full adaptive cruise control system, then I would imagine they'll be taking the liability for that, or at least shared liability with the OEM.
And then the final question would be about tool integration from outside sources. Is it easy, or I'm sure the answer is yes, but how easy is it to integrate other third-party tools into this environment? And, you know, what does somebody need to do to be able to do that?
Other third-party tools, do you have an example?
Well, if you're in the Eclipse environment, for example, you know, there's a wealth of tools out there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a seamless integration?
Yeah, so certainly with things like Eclipse and Visual Studio, Clockwork is a seamless integration. It's a very simple plug-in, requires very little installation, and it doesn't dramatically change the developer's environment. It's still their Eclipse or their Visual Studio that they're used to. They just get a couple of extra Clockwork windows. So with that point of view, if the question was more aimed at can we integrate with, bug tracking systems, management reporting dashboards, then we have a pretty rich API. So, yes, getting data out of Clockwork and into certain other systems, you know, ALM systems, for example, is actually pretty easy.
Okay. I always love when people say something's pretty easy, but I'll leave it at that. Okay, we are wrapping up. I think we answered most, if not all, the questions. Thank you very much to the audience for all that good input. So I'd like to thank Philip for his great presentation and for RogueWave for sponsoring this eCast. And of course, this would never possible. We don't have the engineering audience listening in and paying attention and asking us their great questions. So thank you to everyone for making this a successful event. Have a great day, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.